The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Lyndon Johnson was famous for saying after meetings, and therefore what? I'm going to apply this question, and therefore what, to the movie 2000 Mules and answer it. I also want to examine faulty rebuttals of the movie. In this case, I'm going to deal with the idea that somehow these were legal ballots that should still count even if they were somehow cast illegally. Actor Scott Baio is going to join me. We're going to talk about the politics of California and of Hollywood. And I'm going to join the pilgrim Dante in the circle of Jupiter, which is the circle of justice. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I want to explore today the implications of the film 2000 Mules, and I want to probe them in their widest significance. Now, when I started the film, when Debbie and I kind of paired up with True the Vote and we sort of began this project a few months ago, this film, by the way, has moved at a very accelerated pace. My thoughts were that, look, if there are some important truths about the 2020 election, disputing, for example, or disproving that it was the most secure election, it would be really valuable to get that out. And it doesn't matter if nothing can be done about it. Truth is important in its own right. So, for example, if you have a guy, let's just say, who committed a rape and the statute of limitations has expired, there's nothing you can do about it. Well, but there's DNA evidence later that he did it. It's still valuable to know. So you want the truth to get out. And that's an important reason you make a movie. It's a truth-telling enterprise. And of course, the second objective is obviously to, if there is massive and systematic fraud, how do we stop it from happening again? How do we prevent it in the future? What measures need to be taken by the various parties, state legislatures, attorneys general, secretaries of state, Republican organizations, the RNC, the ordinary citizen? What can we do to ensure that this is not repeated, that this kind of horror is not replicated again and again and again? But as I got into the movie and got into the sheer volume of the fraud and the magnitude of the whole thing hit me. And it occurred to me that we are too hasty in saying simply, let's fix it the next time. Why? Because if there was fraud this time, it's unprecedented. I cannot think of when this has happened before in American history. In fact, it hasn't. We'd have to go all the way back to 1960, and the fraud there was just in perhaps in Cook County, Illinois, maybe a little bit of it in Texas. But that's it. The idea of coordinated fraud in multiple states, I mean, this is something that has, to my knowledge, never occurred in certainly modern history, but I don't think ever. Now, when Lance Armstrong was found to have cheated in the Tour de France, and he had won the Tour de France, what, 7 or 8 times, the Tour de France didn't just say, well, you know, now that we know about this, let's just fix it the next time around. Let's make sure this doesn't happen again. No, they took away his medals. Why? Because they said, this guy should not have the fruits of his cheating. And that, of course, is the basic principle of justice. If something has been obtained illicitly, you have to give it back. If the Nazis, for example, stole Jewish art in the 1930s, even though time has passed, that art belonged to someone. It belonged to families, it belonged to museums. And so to the degree it can be retrieved, it has to be returned. Now, of course, the Constitution in this case is not a very helpful guide because the Constitution doesn't anticipate this kind of event. The Constitution basically says pretty clearly that the electors will meet after the election. They will cast their votes. Votes will be ratified by both houses of Congress. And then the idea is that that's it. The only other provision in the Constitution seems to be impeachment. But the Constitution does not seem to anticipate or provide for what happens if it emerges later that the guy in the Oval Office is a usurper, which is to say that he got there by illicitly, by cheating on the part of his own team. What then? What would happen in that scenario? What steps can be taken, the Constitution doesn't say. And so we are, in that sense, in the open sea here. And it's unclear how this can be resolved. So I just want to say that as we watch this film, typically, unlike earlier movies, when people watch the film, they're pretty quiet at the end because I think the magnitude of all this does hit the audience, hit the viewer. And I think the important thing here is to let it sink in and sort of take stock of what has happened and what has been done by the other side. In the sure belief that this would A, not be found out, and even if it is found out, it's kind of like, so what? What are you going to do about it? It's almost like the left is saying, we own the institutions of culture, and we can push ahead in even in the brazen knowledge that we've been caught and still expect and still are confident that we will get away with it. Mike Lindell and MyPillow are offering a BOGO. That's buy one, get one extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and so much more. Just go to MyPillow.com, use promo code Dinesh, or call 800-876-0227. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to buy one, get one free on select products. By the way, you're going to get a free copy of Mike's book with any purchase. Call 800-876-0227 or go to MyPillow.com to get the discounts. You need to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H Dinesh. Generally, in discussing the subject of voter fraud, courts adopt a principle that is called the but-for principle. And the but-for principle simply says, but for this fraud, would the election outcome have been different? That becomes a critical question. So, for example, if the fraud is minor and wouldn't have made a difference, even if it could be proved, courts are likely to say, well, it's moot. It doesn't really matter. Even if this were true, it would not have changed the outcome of the election. But this is not what we're dealing with in 2000 Mules, because the claim that is advanced in the movie with a lot of supporting evidence that we are talking about an enormous magnitude of a fraud. So the question is, when that's the case, when you can meet the but-for standard, can an election result be overturned? Well, as it turns out, the answer to that question is obviously yes. In 2018, an election was overturned in North Carolina. Now, interestingly, in that case, which, by the way, is mentioned in the movie, the fraud was on behalf of a Republican candidate. Now, it was done by a Democratic operative. The fraud was actually organized by a guy named McRae Dowless, a guy recently died, the late McRae Dowless. And this is a guy who worked for kind of a black left-wing group called the Bladen Improvement Association. And he learned all his tactics of ballot trafficking and paying guys and doing all kinds of shenanigans. He learned it from the Democrats. But then he had a fight with them. He broke with them. They refused to hire him, something like that. So he took his services to a Republican candidate, Mark Harris. And that then resulted in Harris winning the election narrowly. But when there was an investigation, there were admissions that came out of that, and the election result was overturned. Overturned, by the way, not by a court, but by the elections board. And then there was a new election. Harris decided not to run again. Another guy named Dan Bishop ran on the Republican ticket. He won the election. And so that's what happened. But the reason I mention all this is because it simply doesn't follow that we are stuck with a kind of fait accompli, a done deal, that somehow because it's happened, nothing can be done. It's not true. No, things can be done, and things have been done. And But the way that they are done is not simply, because some people come up to me, they go, Dinesh, well, you know, will the Supreme Court be like watching your movie? Are they going to take up the evidence in the movie? And that's, of course, not how it works. The way it works is that you have an investigation. By the way, there is one going on in Yuma. There's another one going on in Georgia. But somebody steps up to the plate. Somebody takes the necessary step. Somebody arrests the mule. Somebody asks them to fess up and makes them fess up. Who paid you? Who put you up to this? Who organized all this? And you work your way through investigation. And the legal investigation essentially picks up where the movie leaves off. And then what you have is a criminal cartel organized by the left and by the Democrats. And that's the way it then makes its way into judicial proceedings and courts. Of course, the Republicans will have an opportunity themselves if they take the House and the Senate to have hearings about all this. So this is in no way going away. The left is trying to make it go away, and they're trying to make it go away with their usual tactics. I kind of laughed today. I saw an article in The Bulwark. Now, The Bulwark is like Bill Kristol's Never Trump enterprise, and they found some, you know, dingbat. This is Amanda Carpenter, Ball State University grad, who apparently learned at Ball State not reasoning skills or analytical skills. None of that is in evidence in the article, but you could call it a certain kind of sarcastic petulance, a certain kind of performance artistry. And that's what the whole review is. It's just basically, yeah, this is a wacky movie. It's for gullible whack jobs who want to cough up money. As if this is any kind of rebuttal. This is basically the Never Trumpers playing to the liberal choir so that liberal money can keep flowing into their pockets. I mean, these people, it's not just that they're indignant about Trump. They've gone, that was their original emotion. But these are careerists, they're opportunists, they're people of low talent who have not been able to be successful in their own right. And so they figured out that the cultural powers on the left, there are lots of liberal billionaires willing to fund nominal Republicans who will take on the right. And so ultimately they're in it in part for the careerism and mostly for the money. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health, exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted. Well, these are some things that don't have to stop just because you get older. Well, neither do you have to endure the normal aging aches and pains, because now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie loves it. She's been using Relief Factor when her shoulder started acting up, and this was the only thing that worked for her. And she's like, look, I don't want to quit taking it because the pain's going to come right back. So she's like, I'm not going to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. Hey guys, I'm really thrilled to welcome to the podcast the actor and producer and writer Scott Baio. In fact, a little bit of a confession from Debbie, which will make her turn a little bit red, but she says when she was a student at Texas State, she had a big poster of Scott Baio up on her wall, and she wasn't alone. So did a number of her friends. So evidently, Scott, you were hot stuff going back to those days. Of course, happy days, you were Chachi. You were also Charles on the 80s sitcom Charles in Charge. And you and your wife, Renee, founded the Bailey Baio Angel Foundation for special needs children. Scott, welcome. We were talking a moment ago, just before the podcast, about California and about Florida. And you were saying how you're spending a little more time in Florida. Of course, Debbie and I are refugees from California, now in Texas. Talk a little bit about the way in which, I mean, California is the most beautiful state in the nation, in my opinion, just because of the enormous just variety of the state from the north down to the beaches in the south. But talk about the different mood in California as opposed to say Florida.
Well, Dinesh, I agree with you. Southern California, in my opinion, is once was one of the most beautiful parts in the world. In terms of everything, whether beaches, mountains, just stunning. And I've been here a long time, and I've seen it devolve into just an absolute cesspool. And it's unfortunate because I always get confused by people that vote the same way and expect a different result. But we spent a lot of time in Florida, my wife and my daughter and myself. We love it down there. And I know you're in Texas, and we are kind of trying to get to Florida, but our daughter goes to a wonderful school and she has a ton of friends. So it ain't easy. You know what I mean? There's a lot of moving parts, and I have family here. And I've been here since 1976. I mean, this is my home. We came out of New York, right from Brooklyn to here. But it's the feel here and the feel in Florida. I was just in Naples and Fort Myers. And the people in Florida just enjoy life. And they're very cool people. They all like their governor. And here, it's just, it's sad. It's sad to me because I do love it here. And it's sad what this place has turned into.
Now, it used to be for a while that the Democrats would kind of ruin the inner city, where you would have crime and you'd have surging problems with drugs and the schools were horrible. But the rest of the state would be suburban, would be rural, and essentially you could still find a good life in a blue state. Because there were only parts of it that had been, in a way, corrupted or destroyed. But it seems like with California, the corruption is spreading out so that even if you're not in inner city LA, nevertheless, you still feel choked. And is it because California has become such a fanatical one-party state and the crazies are basically running the asylum?
Well, yeah, but it all leads back to crime, Dinesh. There's no consequences here, and you can steal up to $1,000. I mean, we have pharmacies CVS in my neighborhood closing because of all the shoplifting and all the stealing. There's nothing they can do about it. So what I think once, and I don't want anybody to deal with crime, but what was once, you know, crime located in the cities, now the criminals are realizing, well, wait a minute, we can go to the suburbs and steal from these people. And there's no consequences there either, and they have nice stuff. So why not? So you're sort of trapped here with the crime, and I think that's why it. So you run out of stuff to steal, and we got to go find new territory, and that's what's happening here. And when did you leave here, Dinesh?
Pardon?
When did you leave here?
Well, a few years ago, I was in Rancho Santa Fe for about a decade, and then I was in La Jolla, and then Debbie and I got married in 2016. We were initially half-time in California, half-time in Texas, but then we just made the decision, and it's a really good decision because we did this pre-COVID, is listen, let's just pack up the bags and stay in Texas. And I've never, even though we had the beautiful ocean view, on the balance, neither of us have ever looked back.
Yeah, I don't blame you, and I admire you, but to walk down the block and see somebody defecating on the sidewalk and somebody smoking crack right here, and you know, and I'm with my kid, and it's all gotten to the lowest common denominator out here. Rather than helping people, we've let everybody do whatever they want, and that doesn't work.
Let's take a pause. When we come back, I'd like to talk to Scott Baio about the politics of Hollywood. Well, it's finally happened. The Fed is realizing the dire straits our economy is in thanks to our loose and irresponsible monetary policy. Apparently, you can't just spend trillions every year with no repercussions. Duh. Now, to play catch-up, the Fed has been raising rates and plans to 7 times this year. You're already starting to see those ripple effects in the housing market as people's buying power diminishes. Have you considered what would happen in the stock market if our whole economy stalls out? Well, don't wait till that happens. Take some of your profits from the stock market now and solidify them with gold from Birch Gold. Throughout history, gold has maintained its value better than any other investment in the world. Text Dinesh to 989898. You get a free, no obligation information kit on holding gold in a tax-sheltered retirement account. I buy my gold from from Birch Gold. You should too. With countless five-star reviews and A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, I trust the professionals at Birch Gold. So text Dinesh to 989898 and secure the gains that you've made while you can. I'm back with actor and writer and producer Scott Baio. Scott, we were actually talking about movie distribution, and you said that you're looking forward to seeing 2,000 Mules tonight, even though you've seen some of the clips and things about it. I mean, this is a movie that we had to release in an age of censorship. And so our normal distribution, which is, you know, Amazon Prime and Apple iTunes, I'm like, I'm not going to put the movie on these cancelable platforms. And so, I mean, we're in an industry, movies, you, of course, have been all your life in movies, that seems to be changing dramatically, doesn't it?
Changing how? Well, tell me, because I think we're on the same page, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean in two ways. First of all, you know, I think back to when I came to America in the late 70s, early 80s, and there were just really good movies. And by good movies, I mean they had plot, they had character, they had suspense, they had all the elements that make a movie. Now you have to sort of drag me to the movies because I find that those basic elements of storytelling seem to have been lost. So I mean on the substantive side, but then I also mean that Hollywood has essentially become this kind of regimented one-party state within a state.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think the movie business is—it's become a movie about tentpole movies, which is, you know, all the Marvel movies and the big giant movies. It's hard for a small story, and I like Marvel movies, I do, but it's hard for smaller movies to get any sort of attraction. In terms of television, it seems that they want to shock people into watching shows, and I could never understand that. I mean, I grew up at a different time. I guess I was on television at a different time. There are, I would say, a large majority of this country that really would like to see a good, solid, decent television show without wokeism in it, or if you have wokeism in it, you counter it with something, right? So, and I, where does it start? I don't know. I guess it starts at the head. I don't know who's buying, who's selling these television shows, but there is a space for a point counterpoint show.
Yeah. I mean, remember Scott, going back to the 80s, I forget the name of the show now, but it was Michael J. Fox, who was kind of this capitalist right winger, but he was in a left wing family. And so what you had is, that's right. And so this is what you mean, I think, by the point counterpoint, because inside of the show, you would be treated to the sort of different characters and the sort of arguments that went back and forth. And to my knowledge, there's nothing like that now. And you don't even see it in the political sphere. If CNN has a panel, it's eight guys who think the same thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because, and you know, the bottom line, Dinesh, really is this. I have liberal friends and we hang out and we'll smoke a cigar and we'll go at it in terms of whatever the issue is. And at the end of the day, see you tomorrow. There's no hatred. There's no animosity. We've lost that, and I feel bad because I don't hate anybody, and I can argue with anybody about how I feel, but don't hate me because of how I feel. I'm not a Neanderthal, you know what I mean? I don't want dirty air. You know, people think Republicans, conservatives have their own supply of air and water, and we want to make everybody else's dirty. And I say, you guys are crazy. I don't want to pollute anything. So my point is, we're humans and we all want the same thing, but sometimes we look at it differently. And to getting back to your point of television and Family Ties, which was a fantastic show, you can have a different opinion within a television show and still watch the show because it's fun and funny and it's a good story and nobody's being made fun of or whatever the problem. Nobody's being, what's the word, triggered or whatever these code words that they have now. Just let it go. Let people talk. Let people express their opinion in any venue.
Now, do you think, Scott, that the reason that we don't see that in the shows is because we don't see it in Hollywood as a community? And what I mean by that is that if the attitude of the people in Hollywood is, here's Scott Baio, we really do know deep down that he's a nice guy. He's been a member of our community for two generations. But nevertheless, the moment he came out as a conservative, the moment he started posting on those things, he now becomes sort of suspect. He becomes persona non grata. And if that's happening in Hollywood as a culture, it's going to be reflected in their plots, in their stories.
Sure. Well, you see it all the time. It's happened to me. It's happened to other actors have said, don't hire conservatives. And thank, Whoopi Goldberg, whom I don't agree with very much, said, you can't do that. This is not who we are. Don't hire you because you're this, because you're that. I mean, Dinesh, it's such a long answer. I know we don't have that much time, but people on the left, I think, are in lockstep. They do not change. They do not go off the track at all. And that's how they do their job. And I know a lot of these people, and I like a lot of those people, but that's what it's become. It's become, your side and my side. And there is absolutely no crossing over at all. And it's unfortunate. I've seen, I had somebody write back to me in an email. We don't want anything to do with Scott Trump Baio. And what does my political belief have to do with what I'm trying to do on television? So this is what has happened out here, and it's crazy. But I think what's happening with a lot of these Christian movies, a lot of these other platforms that are starting to pop up, I think it's going to start letting those things grow. And at some point, Dinesh, let me ask you this. At some point, doesn't it have to settle down? Doesn't it have to just stop? Do you think?
You'd hope so. I mean, I don't think this is a fight that the conservatives started, because conservatives have always had the view that the liberals may be wrong, but they're well-intentioned. But that's not what they think of us. And I think that's poisoned our discourse and introduced, I think, this polarization the way that you've described. And it's about as bad in Hollywood as anywhere else. So we are at a very regrettable point, I think, in the country. And it's not clear to me when and how we're going to get out of it.
But at what point does anybody on either side say, you know what, I just want to be safe. I want to be able to leave my house at any time and not have somebody come up from behind me and try to take my money or take my purse or steal my car. Or I want to walk down the street with my kid or go to the park and not see somebody doing drugs. That's the part that absolutely boggles my mind, is we both want that. And it seems like we can't seem to ever get to it, because they're blaming, and then we blame them, and then they blame us. And I'm not saying it's equal. I'm not saying that at all. I think we want law and order. And I hope I'm wrong, but it feels like they don't want law and order because it gets to a political end for them that they want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you've totally put your finger on it. Scott, we'll have to pick it up next time, but thanks for really joining me. I think you've described beautifully what's wrong with Hollywood and what's wrong with California. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Dinesh.
Let's face it, America's facing some huge challenges: soaring inflation, the worsening crisis at the southern border, alarming crime rates, radical ideas being forced on our nation's children. Well, it's time to join forces with an organization that loves America. This is AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. It's America's conservative 50-plus organization. My friends at AMAC are action-oriented. They fight every day to represent your interests. Join today. Go to amac.us. Dinesh and start receiving great benefits, discounts on travel, cell phones, restaurants, all while fighting to preserve America and the causes that conservatives care about. For just $16 a year, you can join forces with AMAC and 2.3 million Americans who share your values. Debbie and I are proud members of AMAC, and you can be one too. America needs you, and you need AMAC. Go to amac.us, that's amac.us/Dinesh, and join or renew today. I want to turn to the Supreme Court, where I don't understand why, after now a period of time, the identity of the leaker, the person who put out the Alito opinion in the Dobbs case and basically leaked it to Politico, why the identity of the leaker is not been found out yet. Sometimes it's difficult to know if something is happening, let's say, in the federal government, because you don't know which department, which agency. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who it could be. And so it takes time to try to find out. But with today's technology, we're talking about 9 justices. Well, actually 8, because Ketanji Jackson was not on the court yet. We're talking about a small population of justices and their clerks. And the leak must have come from one of them. Now, it's almost certain to be one of the leftist justices, but let's say you look at all 9. It came from there. And how hard can it be to find out? Now, interestingly, Justice Roberts simply asked the marshal to sort of check it out. I think it would have been better to bring in more firepower, more people with the intelligence ability to sort of get to the bottom of this. I mean, there's a whole field of detection for this kind of stuff. So it really shouldn't be that difficult. It's a little mysterious to me why they haven't found the person, or have they, and they're simply not announcing it publicly. And the question is, why would they not do that? Now, here is an article by a Georgetown law professor, Josh Chaffetz, which I find quite disturbing, because he's commenting about the demonstrations in front of these justices' homes. Now, this is the sort of motive of the leak, right? The motive of the leak was to set off a kind of mob reaction in which angry, in this case, leftists would show up at Kavanaugh's home and Alito's home and Thomas's home and start abusing them and abusing their families, because after all, justices are human. And so to try to intimidate them, to try to put pressure on them. And this Georgetown law professor, and it's hard to believe here, we're talking about a law professor. I mean, this is not some professor of poetry or sociology from whom this would not be surprising. But he goes that this kind of behavior, intimidation, mob threats, is good. And he goes, now I realize that when it's done by conservatives, it's bad. But he goes, in this case, quote, the mob is right. So in other words, according to Professor Chaffetz, there are 2 types of mob rule. There's benign mob rule, or good mob rule. That's mob rule by the left. And then there is bad mob rule. That's mob rule by the right. And so you begin to see here that all the general kind of neutral principles that say things like we need to be tolerant of others, even if they disagree with us, or we need to have a kind of neutral arbiter when justice is involved, and we don't want justice to be corrupted by intimidation, by mob showing up at your door. I mean, think about it. This was the philosophy of the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan would show up, for example, if you had a black guy who was accused of raping a white girl. And the idea was, the Klan was like, you know, we're watching you in the jury. You better give us the conviction we're looking for. Otherwise, we know exactly who you are and you might be getting a visit from us. So all of this is part of the kind of an ugly trajectory in American history. And yet this is exactly the trajectory that some in the left today seem to be endorsing and seem to be okay with, in the full knowledge that that is what they're doing. It's not like Chaffetz is saying this is not mob justice. He's not saying that we're not intimidating the justices. He's saying, yes, it is mob justice. Yes, we are intimidating these justices. And you know what? We're right to do so. Who likes to eat 6 servings of fruits and vegetables every single day? Well, who can realistically do that? Balance of Nature provides that. And their products are 100% natural, vine-ripened, whole food, and third-party tested. This is real science, real food, real nutrition. Debbie and I take 10 daily servings of the fruits and veggies. They come in 6 small capsules. Take a look. No trouble swallowing. Always fresh. Nothing artificial. They smell great. Debbie also swears by this. The fiber and spice keeps her regular. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the balance of nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first balance of nature order. Use discount code BALANCE. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. I talked yesterday on the podcast about Julie Kelly's article. This was her interview with Brandon Caserta, one of the defendants who was exonerated in the Whitmer kidnapping case. But Julie's article is a two-part article, and I actually only commented on the first part. I want to pick up on a few details in the second part. Because here's a guy, Brandon Caserta, kind of a young guy in his 30s. In fact, he's, it tells me here how old he is. He just had a birthday. I think it was his 34th birthday. 34-year-old guy. And big talker. Was obviously cooped up under COVID. Then was talked into this idea. We need to take action. We need to go after these bad guys. And so was sort of lured into this kidnapping scheme. But the kidnapping scheme was concocted by the FBI, organized by the FBI, paid for by the FBI. Would never have happened if it were not for the FBI. So the FBI are the real criminals here. But nevertheless, the FBI hasn't been put in prison. They should be. But Caserta was locked up for 18 months in the in a county prison in White Cloud, Michigan. And he tells Julie, you know, his life essentially stopped. He was fired from his job. That's no surprise. He says, quote, I had everything taken away from me. Time just stopped. Now, the court assigned him an attorney. And the good thing is they didn't do a court-appointed attorney in this case. They hired a private attorney. The court said, we'll pay for you. This guy was Michael Hills, a Kalamazoo defense attorney. And it turns out a really capable guy. So to his unbelievable good luck, Brandon Caserta got a real fighter. And this guy began to team up with the other defense attorneys to really dig up the full extent of the FBI's complicity in this operation. And these defense attorneys, first, they began to notice that there were similarities in what happened in the Whitmer kidnapping and what subsequently happened in January 6th. I mean, here's a little one. The FBI had put forward the idea. This is the FBI's idea. Why don't you guys storm the Capitol? Think about it. They're talking about storming the Michigan state capitol. And this was months, of course, before January 6th. So right there, you have the very suspicious overlap between the Whitmer plot and the January 6th, quote, insurrection. Now, very interestingly, the media was like all over this case because after all, this showed Trump had apparently used reckless words that inspired these white supremacists. But the moment it became clear that this was an FBI operation from start to finish, that there were just as many FBI guys involved as there were so-called perpetrators, you might have noticed that media coverage just sort of disappeared. The media just decided, we don't really want to cover this one anymore. It's kind of like with the Waukesha massacre. Once they realize it's a black guy and it's a left-wing radical, suddenly that, you know, mass killing completely vanishes from public consciousness. Now, it's very difficult to win these cases against the government. Why? Because, first of all, there are jurors who basically think, well, if the guys aren't guilty, why are they here? Why would the government have even gone after them? This is, of course, the residual, the kind of automatic trust that so many people have, and I used to have, in the institutions of government. If you had asked me 30 years ago, well, why is it the case that the federal government has a 95% success rate in prosecuting guys in federal cases, I would say, well, that's probably because 95% of them did it. They're guilty. And so, yes, the government is able to prove it. But today, I would not take that view at all. I'd have to look case by case, and I would look with that kind of skeptical eye because I know the way in which these thugs with badges can and sometimes do do function. Now, but the judge was not like that. He gave the government, he gave the FBI all kinds of deference. He actually suppressed all kinds of communications that would have shown the full extent of the FBI's complicity in this. So he kind of gave, he made the prosecution's case easy. And yet, the jury deliberated for 4 days and decided that in Brandon Caserta's case and one other, now it's time to acquit. There is reasonable doubt. Not only is there reasonable doubt, we kind of know who cooked this one up. It's the FBI. And so on Brandon Caserta's 34th birthday, he got the good news that he was free to go, free to go. Now, not to say that it's going to be easy. It's never easy for these guys to put their lives back together. First of all, they're not starting out at a very good place. Then they have the setback of having been locked up for all this time. Their family relations have often deteriorated in the meantime. They have absolutely no money. Their faces have been splashed over in the media. But nevertheless, it's a big win. It's a big win when the government brings the full force of the U.S. government against you. They try to get you, and then they don't. And so I like what Brandon Caserta says at the end. He goes, "I hit the lottery by getting Mike Hills." He's talking about his defense attorney. He goes, "He is an absolute badass." And that's what you want. By the way, if you ever have the FBI come to your door, make sure that you have an attorney who is, quote, an absolute badass. Brandon Caserta got one. And these defense attorneys working together were able to do something that's almost unthinkable, and that is turn the tables on the U.S. government, turn the tables on the FBI, overcome the hostility, or at least the overcome the resistance of a judge, and convince a jury that in this case, the government and the FBI, they're the true bad guys. I want to talk today about Canto 19 of the Paradiso. This is the circle of Jupiter, the circle of justice. Very important section for Dante. But before I do, I'm going to jump ahead to a scene in Canto 22. So it's kind of funny. I'm using a section of a later canto to lay the groundwork for Canto 19, the circle of Jupiter. Dante is ascending higher and higher into paradise. And he's with Beatrice. And even though his gaze is always upward, at one point, Beatrice tells Dante, in effect, you know, just look back. Take a look back. And Dante says this: "My vision traveled back through all the spheres, through seven heavens, and then I saw our globe. It made me smile. It looked so paltry there." Now, first of all, this is a great image. Here's Dante looking back. He's essentially far in space, in ascending spheres, and he looks back at Earth. And this is important for a bunch of reasons. What Dante is basically saying is now he has a different perspective. He's not seeing things on Earth from the ground. He has, if not quite the God's eye view, he at least has a much more detached view. And it makes him smile. Why? Why is Dante smiling? Smiles are kind of important in the Divine Comedy. Usually when there's a smile, something's going on. Dante doesn't say what's going on, but if you think about it, it's not that hard to figure out. Manfred's smile, which is basically I was a warrior, you expect to see me in hell? Hey, fancy seeing me here. You know what? I'm really happy that I'm here in purgatory on my way to paradise. Here, Dante's smiling because it's sort of like Dante saying to himself, you know, we hear so much talk on Earth about this guy's going to go to heaven and that guy's going to go to hell and this guy's going to make it and that guy's not going to make it. And that's okay. That's the earthly point of view. That's the way that we humans talk, in which we're trying to figure out God's plan and we're trying to figure out divine justice. But what Dante is basically smiling is because the human view is so limited. The human view is so short-sighted in the literal meaning of the term. It doesn't go that far. There's a myopia here. And the myopia is not because we're not well-intentioned, but it is the function of being human, that we just don't have the scope We just don't have we don't have the resources of omniscience which God has. So God knows, and I think this is a very important point for Dante, and I think a very important point for all of us. It should make us a little bit more. It should not make us not willing to analyze or assess or even judge, but it should make us extremely cautious in the way that we do. And it should make us very cautious, particularly when we're attributing things to God. In other words, we're saying that we know what God is going to decide in this matter, and particularly on the extremely weighty and important matter of dealing with human souls. Now, with all this in mind, let's return to the canto 19, the Canto of Jupiter, where Dante raises this exact question. I'm going to quote him now. He raises the question, consider that man born along the Indus. What's the Indus? It's the river in India, the Indus River. India is named loosely after the Indus. Consider that man born along the Indus, where you will not find a soul who speaks or reads or writes of Christ. Wow. I think you know where Dante is going here. Where Dante is basically going is the guy who is outside the reach of Christianity, who has not been preached the gospel of Christ. What's going to happen to that guy? The Bible is really clear. There's no way to heaven but through Christ. But Dante doesn't disagree with that. Dante is asking, can Christ's salvific grace, remember, Christ died for all men. He died to take away the sins of all men. The question is not whether Christ is the road to salvation. He obviously is. The question is, does Christ's sacrifice, can it extend to some guy who is, in a sense, outside the orbit of Christianity altogether, has never heard from an apostle, has never heard from a pastor, has never heard from a priest, perhaps doesn't even know what the words Christ even mean. And all of his desires, all his acts are good as far as human reason sees. He dies unbaptized, dies without the faith. What is this justice that condemns his soul? What is his guilt if he does not believe? So I'm not going to try to address that question here. We'll come back the next time and see what Dante says about it. But Dante is raising a very profound question. Is it really just? Can we seriously contend that a person who has never heard of Christianity, but nevertheless has lived, tried to live and successfully lived a good life by the human lights, not obviously free of human flaws, but obviously no one is that person going to be damned? Where's the justice in it? And where is the blame? How can you blame someone like that for not having a knowledge that was never offered to him? So you can see that right here in the circle of justice or Jupiter, Dante does not hesitate to ask the tough questions and even the awkward questions. What happens to, in a sense, virtuous pagans? I remember we had a sort of circle of limbo for the virtuous pagans, but it's very clear here that Dante has not given his final answer on what happens to such people. He raises the question here again in Paradise.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.